It is only a few weeks after the famous victory of Waterloo. England rejoices. But the death of Captain George Osborne has driven his widow Amelia close to madness. And back in Vanity Fair, Miss Matilda Crawley is only moderately moved by the great events that have unfolded.
Oh, my goodness.
What now?
It says on the account of his gallantry at Waterloo, Captain Rawdon Crawley has been promoted to Colonel.
But Colonel? And a hero? Oh, what a pity, Briggs, he ever made that disastrous marriage. Otherwise, he'd be in a position to marry a rich brewer's daughter with a quarter of a million. As my nephew and heir, he or his children would also have had my money. Some day or other, when...
Pray, don't talk of dying, Matilda.
I wasn't going to. I'm not in a hurry to quit this world, whatever anyone may wish. In fact, I'm improving daily.
Yes, of course, that's plain for all to see, but...
But how dreadful that he is a doomed pauper with a dancing girl for a wife.
But...
Colonel Crawley has dragged our name to the mud by marrying that creature Rebecca Sharp. She was just as lowly as you are, Briggs. I must admit, younger and a great deal prettier and cleverer.
Yes, yes, I suppose she was. But Rebecca was kind
don't
to me and
think I don't know that you were an accomplice of that abandoned wretch.
What?
No doubt you can't wait to get rid of me, but I can tell you now you will find yourself disappointed in my will.
But I care nothing for money.
Then you're an even bigger fool than I thought you. Now write to Mr. Waxy at once. Tell him I want him here in Brighton immediately.
But don't you...
Immediately!
Miss Crawley writes anxious letters to her solicitor almost every day of the week. The fact is, she is in great perplexity. Her dear nephews and nieces all shower her with tokens of their affection, but having disinherited her nephew Rawdon, she still cannot decide whom to leave her fortune to. Some weeks later, William Dobbin, newly promoted major, is accompanying George Osborne's grieving widow back to England by sea. Her state of mind still causes him concern.
Of course, I fully intend to accompany you back to your parents. I just wish I could do more for you, Amelia.
You have done everything a good friend of George's could. I just have to keep telling myself that he is gone and will never return to me.
I was thinking, George's father.
What about him?
When you married George, he wanted nothing further to do with you, but that was before George's death.
Before George died a hero's death.
Just so. You told me that he wrote a letter to his father on that last evening.
I found it amongst his dear possessions.
He must have wanted his father to read it.
Yes, of course he must.
So would you like me to take the letter to Mr. Osborne?
Oh, would you? George was so fond of him. And he rejected George because of me.
Well then, when we are landed, I will go and see him and do the best I can.
Thank you. There is something else that perhaps he ought to know.
I don't understand.
Dear George's last precious gift to me. Perhaps Mr. Osborne ought to know that in the course of time he may become a grandfather.
Miss Crawley, meanwhile, is getting tired of Brighton and tired of being an invalid. So when her nephew Pitt, Rawdon's elder brother, arrives in Brighton and asks to see her, she does not deny him. She thinks him a fortune hunter, a sanctimonious prig, but she is feeling so very bored.
My dear aunt.
Pitt, dear Pitt. Mm-hmm. You remember Miss Briggs?
Of course, and with great respect.
Oh, Mr. Pitt, you flatterer.
I didn't expect to see you in pleasure-loving Brighton.
I'm not ashamed to own the reason, aunt. It's a matter of the heart.
Really?
I have for some time been paying my attentions to Lady Jane Sheepshanks.
Daughter of the Dowager Lady Southdown. Yeah. A most eligible young woman, I believe.
She's as good as she is religious. And, I flatter myself, she does not look upon me unfavourably.
Tell me more. I thrive upon romance.
Well, I think you will like Lady Jane enormously. With your permission, I will bring her to meet you.
I should be charmed. I'm relieved to see one member of our family seeking a suitable alliance. I hear dreadful rumours of your disreputable father. So what are the gory details?
Sir Pitt does not get wiser or less profane with age. The fact is, he's become unhealthily interested in the daughter of our butler, Horrocks. The ribbons in Miss Horrocks' cap become more splendid with every week.
Oh, very shocking. So what do the dear Bute Crawleys make of it all? Oh, Mrs. Bute sends me guinea fowls and some remarkably fine cauliflowers and a pin cushion worked by her dear girls.
I'm sure Mrs. Bute would be happy to come and see you again.
No doubt, but she shall not. The woman is a bully. And if there is one thing I will not tolerate, it is being ordered about, isn't it, Briggs?
Indeed, Matilda.
So, may I ask, without wishing in any way to be impertinent, at the moment you do not feel sure where within our family your loyalties lie?
Well, Rawdon sent me a box containing a pair of French epaulettes, a cross of the Legion of Honour, and the hilt of a sword, accompanied by a dutiful letter.
Did this not affect you?
The letter was far too eloquent. It was written by her. And as for relics of battle, I'm sure you can purchase them anywhere abroad.
Well, I am sure you would like Lady Jane Sheepshanks. She's most refined and attentive. I long for you to give her your approval. May I bring her?
At the earliest opportunity.
Mr. Osborne!
Coachman, drive on!
No! I will see you, sir. I've a message for you.
No doubt from that scheming daughter-in-law of mine. Captain Dobbin, I have no quarrel with you personally, but I have sworn to have nothing to do with
you.
You
don't understand. It's a message from your son. He wrote it just before he left to fight.
You'd better get in.
The old man sits stiffly reading his dead son's letter. How can it not move him? And how can he possibly show what he feels?
He doesn't say much.
George was never one who felt it easy to describe what he felt.
In this letter, he promised me that if he fell on the field, he would do it in a manner worthy of his name.
Which he did.
Indeed. Thank you for bringing me this, Captain Dobbin. I'm sorry. Major Dobbin. Since better men are dead, I suppose you step into their shoes.
Better men are dead, but it's only one I wish to speak of.
Let's make it short. We're almost at my office.
I was George's closest friend, and I'm the executor of his will. You must be aware of how small his means were, and of the straitened circumstances now of Amelia. Of his widow.
I don't recognise his widow, sir. Let her go back and live with that cheat of a father.
But are you aware, sir, that her life and her reason almost have been shaken by the blow which has fallen on her?
This is nothing to me.
Except there is something which has given her the will to live again. She will be a mother before very long.
A mother?
Yes. So will you visit the parents' offence upon the child's head? Or will you forgive the child for poor George's sake?
We're here.
Just consider.
Sir, George died without so much as confessing he was in the wrong.
He wrote to tell you.
I am a man of my word. I have sworn never to speak to that woman or to recognize her as my son's wife, and that's what I will stick to until the last day of my life. I bid you good day.
So Major Dobbin fails for the second time in a mission on Amelia's behalf. On his own behalf, he then quietly does what he can to help her have financial security. Back in Brighton, Miss Crawley hears news of the exploits of her nephew and his wife in Paris. It comes in a letter from a French great lady, one of a group of aristocratic émigrés Miss Crawley has befriended during their penurious years of exile in England.
Well, the Countess then says, all the world speaks of the charming Madame Rawdon Crawley and sees in her the grace, the charm, the wit of our dear friend Miss Crawley.
Oh.
To hear her speak of you, her protectress, her mother, would bring tears to the eyes of ogres. How she loves you, our dear, our admirable, our respectable Miss Crawley.
Oh.
We're nearly at the end, and yet how pretty on every occasion this fair creature looks, surrounded by the homage of the men, and soon to be a mother?
What?
And soon to be a mother. Oh, look. Here's a cutting left in the envelope. It's from some journal or other. I can't believe it.
What does it say?
On the 26th of March, the lady of Lieutenant Colonel Crawley of the Life Guards Green, of a son and heir.
Oh!
My dear aunt, I came as soon as I could. You don't look well at all. Shall I send for a doctor?
He's been sent for. But, Pitt, I have decided. I want an immediate celebration of your marriage to Lady Jane Sheepshanks.
But why?
I intend to allow the two of you £1,000 a year during my lifetime, and upon my death...
You don't speak of it.
Upon my death, the bulk of my property will be settled upon you. The solicitor's been sent for.
While Rebecca's son makes a very public entry into the world, affecting the fortunes of many, Amelia gives birth to a baby boy, practically unnoticed.
Oh, there, Georgie. Don't cry. I'm here.
For Amelia, little Georgie's birth changes everything. This child is her being. She envelops the feeble and unconscious creature with love and worship.
Who's the image of his father?
There is no room in her heart for anyone else.
Amelia?
Hush. He's just gone to sleep.
I've come to say goodbye.
Goodbye? And where are you going?
I explained to you. I've accepted this posting to India. To Madras.
Oh, shh, Georgie. Shush.
I've settled George's affairs as best I can. Send any letters, particularly anything relating to my guardianship, to the agents. They will forward them.
Oh, yes. Forgive me. I should have remembered. But dear Georgie looks so adorable, doesn't he? Smiling in his sleep. Oh.
I shall be away a long time.
I shall miss you very much, you know.
You will write to me, won't you?
Of course. I'll write to you about Georgie. Dear William, how good you have been to him and to me. Look at him. Oh, isn't he an angel?
Goodbye, Georgie. God bless you. And God bless you, Amelia. And now I really must go.
And so Major William Dobbin leaves England, possibly for good. And Amelia looks down adoringly at her child, who is laughing in his sleep.
Rawdon, my love.
Yes, Becky?
We have a dilemma.
Colonel and Mrs. Rawdon Crawley sit in the elegant drawing room of their Mayfair house. After several years in Paris, they have returned to take their place in smart English society. But the eternal dilemma is still there.
How are we to live well on nothing a year?
Damned neat way of putting it.
Now, I don't want to diminish your skill at cards. You did very well in Paris.
Yeah, those fellows all ogled you and lost to me. Perfect combination.
Yes, but let's face it, my dear, gambling is good to help your income, but not as an income itself. People get tired of play.
Particularly if they keep on losing.
Exactly. It happened in Paris, and I don't want it happening here.
So, what's to be done? My Aunt Matilda's never going to give us any real money now. And we have a son and heir to provide for. God bless the little fellow.
Let's keep to the question in hand. We have agreed, haven't we, that you're going to sell out of the guards and go on half pay.
Have we?
We've no choice, because I have to get you a place of appointment. Either here at home or in the colonies. Something with a proper income. It's the only secure way for us to survive.
I'll miss the fellows. And the horses. Well, if we must, we must. Do you honestly think I present a good bargain as an official something or other? You've always said I've not much in the brains department.
Rawdon, well, my dear, you don't understand. It's not a question of your abilities. It's a question of whom you know, or, to be truthful, of whom I know.
Ladies here in London have been a bit sticky about you, haven't they?
That's because I've been in Paris and I speak French. But then it's not the ladies' good opinion I have to consider, is it?
You mean the gentleman?
How else am I going to find you a worthwhile appointment?
Of course, the Crawleys depend for credit largely on their rumoured expectations from Rawdon's rich aunt. They therefore generously give their patronage to all those of Miss Crawley's tradesmen and purveyors who are foolish enough to serve them.
Gentlemen! Gentlemen! Gentlemen, rest assured, as soon as we hear the sad news, your accounts will be settled with interest. You have my word. Thank you, gentlemen, and good day.
Nobody, of course, is paid.
I thought they would never go.
Credit, of course, breeds more credit, as the sums owed rapidly increase and the tradesmen labour to keep the Crawleys afloat. To that extent, Becky has solved the problem of how to live well on nothing a year. But alas, selfishly, Miss Crawley decides to die. Yes, the vain and terrified old heathen has finally quitted Vanity Fair. The dark curtain has descended.
Yes, a sad day for us all.
It is.
Such a sad day. Dear Lady Jane and myself are, of course, overwhelmed with grief. Such a remarkable old lady. We spent our honeymoon with her. Yes, we shall all miss her.
Damn it, Becky, damn it!
Calm down, my dear, calm down.
But Pitt has got everything. My mealy-mouthed elder brother, whom she used to despise.
There's no use in crying over spilt milk.
Even my uncle, the Reverend Bute, has got a few £1,000s.
Mrs. Bute will be mortified. She expected more with that vast brood of children to provide for.
But Becky, I've only got £100. I mean, I knew I wouldn't get it all, but I did think with the boy and sending her all those battlefield souvenirs we bought in Brussels and my, damn it, distinguished military record, we might have got more than this.
Well, we haven't.
So what can we do?
We're going to write to your brother, and we're going to congratulate him on his good fortune.
What?
A good-humoured, frank, manly letter. Don't worry, I'll write it for you.
Why?
All the rage in the world won't get us your aunt's money now. The rest of the family will be incensed with Pitt, but we won't. Remember, now that he's married to Lady Jane Sheepshanks, he's got a real place in society. Who knows how they'll respond? At very least, they'll be pleasantly surprised.
I think I'd better take dictation now, Becky. And if there are any damn difficult words, make sure to tell me how to spell them.
Inspired by his triumph, Pitt travels back to Hampshire to see his father, the aging Sir Pitt, whose licentious behaviour has, he decides, become a disgrace to the newly enriched family.
Don't you tell me what I can and can't do!
You have installed your butler's daughter in a position of...
This is a pretty piece, isn't she?
Miss Horrocks is not your social equal.
What do I care? Besides, I'm not going to marry her, am I? I don't have to do that to get what I want. I just give her ribbons.
And the ruling of your household.
If I do, what business is that of yours?
Father, you are the talking point of the whole county.
Well, what if I am? What's it to you? Just because you've got all my sister's money, you think I've got almighty, don't you?
What?
Yes, she must have taken leave of her senses. Oh, you always were a sanctimonious prig, Pitt.
Really?
I wish I'd never born you.
Father!
At least Rawdon had a bit of something about him. At least...
Father?
Ah! Oh.
But Sir Pitt does not reply. In fact, he cannot reply. Meanwhile, Mrs. Rawdon Crawley, armed with an encouraging letter from Lady Jane, has warded off the worst of her creditors. And in pursuit of her master plan, she gathers round her a party of eminent gentlemen who often come to her house to finish the night. She always has ice and coffee for them, the best in London.
You know something, Rawdon?
I'm Mark King and play. What would you say, my lad?
I must have a sheepdog.
A what? Right, gentlemen, ready?
Oh, dear. My lord, I do believe my husband isn't paying me any attention.
Then let me pay you attention instead.
Will you?
Willingly.
The Marquis of Steyne is by far the most eminent of Rebecca's gentlemen guests. An aristocrat of ancient privilege, he possesses a fine town palace, Gaunt House, in Gaunt Street, where his wife and his sister live among the 200 silver teapots available for his guests. But despite his high station and immense wealth, a certain reputation clings to my lord's name.
So tell me, what do you want with a sheepdog?
I meant a moral sheepdog.
What the devil's that?
A dog to keep the wolves away from me. A female companion.
Are you sure you need one? Isn't the shepherd, I mean your husband, up to his job?
The shepherd is too fond of cards and going to his clubs.
Gad, what a debauched guardian of his flock. More likely to have a cigar in his mouth than a panpipe.
Exactly.
And look at him now. He's shearing poor Lord Southdown.
I have heard that you were once a gambler yourself, and won money of the most august personages of the realm.
I have put all that behind me. I have moved on to fresh pastures. Blithe little lambs now gamble for my pleasure. You sure you need a sheepdog?
Very sure. But whoever she is, I promise she won't bark at you.
Later that evening, Rawdon, having emptied the pockets of Lord Southdown, seeks out his wife.
Becky, I'm just going up to see Rawdy.
But he'll be asleep by now.
Poor little fellow wasn't well earlier.
He has a nurse to look after him. No. If anything is wrong, he'll cry himself back to sleep soon enough.
The mother always knows best.
My lord, didn't see you there. All the same, maybe I'll, well, you know.
I do believe the gallant war hero is becoming a bit of a sentimentalist.
Rawdy? Rawdy, are you asleep? Oh. Ah, well, maybe it's for the best. Don't want you to be a crybaby, eh? We Crawleys are made of sterner stuff. Oh, sorry. Sorry, damn cigar. I'll put it out. Oh, there, there. Shh. Listen, Rawdy. I'll take you down to the stables tomorrow and you can see all the horses. Then we'll go to the park. You'd like that, wouldn't you, eh? Now, that's a good fellow. Don't cry. Shh, now. Now, look. You know I'm damned fond of you, don't you? And your mother, too, in her way. I know she doesn't spend as much time with you as she might. But that doesn't mean she isn't damned fond of you, does it? No. Just as long as we're quite clear about that, Rawdy.
Meanwhile, in rustic Hampshire, Sir Pitt Crawley, felled by a stroke, has been removed to the very apartments in which his wife had been previously extinguished. Here he is tended by Miss Hester, the quietest and most gentle of the household's maids. She is also much cheaper than a professional nurse.
How's my father doing, Hester?
He's as comfortable as can be expected, Mr. Pitt. God bless the good old soul.
So you're as comfortable as can be expected, eh, Father? Well, then, carry on with the good work, Hester.
I will, sir.
Good girl, Hester.
Oh, thank you, sir. Oh, be quiet, you old nuisance. Hold your tongue, you stupid old fool. If you don't stop, you'll be in trouble. Be quiet, do you hear me?
This is all that is left after more than 70 years of cunning and struggling and scheming and selfishness. An unloved, whimpering old idiot who's put in and out of bed and cleaned and fed like a baby. But nothing lasts forever in Vanity Fair.
Come in.
If you please, Sir Pitt. Hmm? Sir Pitt died this morning, Sir Pitt.
He's dead?
Yes, which is why I'm calling you Sir Pitt, Sir Pitt. I was a-making of his toast, Sir Pitt, for his gruel, Sir Pitt, which he took every morning regular at 6.
Yeah.
And I thought I heard a moan like Sir Pitt, and, well, you are Sir Pitt. And I hope you'll remember how well I looked after your lovely old father.
Yes, thank you, Hester. You may go.
Yes, sir.
At last, I am Sir Pitt, and the family name shall rise again. Jane, where are you?
I told you we were right to send that letter to Pitt, congratulating him on his inheritance. Hooray.
Hooray? What do you mean? What's the point of going down to that stupid place for a funeral? I had my share for what it was worth when I came of age.
You'll never be of age. Now, run out to Madame Brunoy's, for I must have some mourning.
What?
And get a crepe on your hat and a black waistcoat. Tell her we've come into money because of Sir Pitt's death. Word will get round and it'll keep the tradesmen quiet for a while.
Surely you don't mean us to go?
Of course I do.
What about little Rorty?
Oh, let him stay in the nursery and wear a black frock. Now go and do as I bid you.
What do you intend?
I intend that Lady Jane shall present me at court next year. I intend that your brother shall give you a seat in Parliament. I intend that Lord Steyne shall have you made an Irish secretary, or a West Indian governor, or a treasurer or something. Don't you see, Rawdon? A bright new future is opening before us.
When Becky's recent aristocratic acquaintance, Lord Steyne, visits her one evening, he finds her with her new companion in the throes of frantic packing.
My dear Rebecca, what on earth's going on?
Alas, I've been plunged into grief and despondency by the death of my husband's dear papa. Sir Pitt Crawley is dead, my lord. As you can imagine, we've been weeping and wailing all day.
Oh, Rebecca, how can you?
I don't believe you've met Miss Briggs. She used to be the companion to dear departed Miss Crawley, but I've been fortunate enough to secure her for myself.
My lord.
Miss Briggs, how do you do? So you are to be Mrs. Rawdon Crawley's sheepdog, are you?
I don't understand.
Oh, don't worry, my dear. It's a private joke I have with the Marquis.
So that scoundrel Sir Pitt is dead, is he? You know, he might have been a peer if he'd played his cards better. But he was more interested in earthier things, the old satyr.
Oh, dear. My lord, I believe you've embarrassed Miss Briggs.
No, not at all, my lord.
My apologies, Miss Briggs. Perhaps to spare your blushes, you could go downstairs and make me a cup of tea.
Of course, my lord. Yes, my lord.
So, that's your sheepdog, is it?
Recollect that I do have my reputation to consider.
A reputation or no reputation, I still don't understand why in God's name you're going to Sir Pitt's funeral. His son is a pompous ass. Now, don't try and tell me you ache for his company.
Of course not. But though I am most grateful for your attentions and gifts, there is one precious gift you cannot give me, which the new Sir Pitt and his highly connected and virtuous wife, Lady Jane, can provide.
And what pray is that?
Respectability.
Do you really think Rorty will be all right left with Miss Briggs?
Of course he will. Miss Briggs is going to make him a black frock and he'll be perfectly content. Dear Briggs, she even lent me some money for the journey.
And so Rawdon and Rebecca travel back to Queen's Crawley on a visit which they hope will provide them with not just respectability, but also enhanced credit and, dare it be said, perhaps a little hard cash.
Colonel Crawley!
Look, all those people waving. We must be nearly there. The younger son and the former governess return, and they seem to be pleased. God bless their rustic hearts. Come on, Rawdon, wave back.
By gad, I don't believe it.
Who is that?
That's old Mother Locke.
God bless you. How'd you do, Mrs. Locke?
She must be nearly 100. Damn me, how time flies.
Both of them are thoughtful. He thinks about Eton and his mother, whom he remembers, a frigid, demure woman, and a sister who died, of whom he had been passionately fond, and about little Rawdy at home. And Rebecca thinks of her own youth, and momentarily shudders at the dark secrets of those early tainted days.
Rawdon! Rebecca!
Pitt's got fat. At least he's doing things handsomely.
Rawdon, get out quickly.
Sir Pitt! Oh, Lady Jane, such a tragic loss.
We bear it as well as we can. Rawdon?
Pitt, great deal of water under the bridge, eh?
I've never been a man to bear grudges.
No, of course not.
My dear Lady Jane.
Rebecca, I'm so sorry you couldn't bring little Rawdon.
Alas, the brave little boy is far from well.
I am sorry to hear that. Could you not have...
No. He gets travel sick at the best of times. Oh. It broke my heart to abandon him. But I felt I had to come and pay my respects.
Bless you, my dear.
But may I tell you what I would like beyond anything else?
Tell me.
You maybe think me silly, but I should like, as soon as it is possible, to go to the nursery and see your dear, dear little baby.
Of course, my dear. I quite understand.
Oh, he is adorable.
But... I do worry sometimes.
Of course, when little Rawdy so much as coughs, my world is in crisis.
Is it really?
Oh, yes. Believe me, I will happily share with you all the fruits of my experience.
Oh, would you like to hold him?
Why, yes, of course. Thank you. There, there. Now, little darling. There, there. There, there. There.
Oh, well, God bless you. You know, I had wondered, forgive
what?
Me, when dear Pitt inherited from his aunt, his other relatives were so bitter, and I wondered why you and Rawdon...
My dear Lady Jane, what care we for poverty? I am glad that Miss Crawley's money has gone to restore the splendour of the noble old family of which I am so proud to be a member.
Oh.
Sir Pitt will make a much better use of it than Rawdon ever could. Of course, I would not for a moment want Sir Pitt to hear this embarrassing admission.
I understand your concern, but I am more than happy to bear witness to your kindness.
Oh dear, I do believe your little angel is in tears again. My dear Miss Briggs swears by syrup of figs. There, there.
And amid these scenes of domestic intimacy... Old Sir Pitt is laid to rest. His old pointer dog howls for his loss at first, but these are the only accents of grief heard within the grounds of Queen's Crawley.
Well, you've already spruced up the old place quite a bit, Pitt.
I flatter myself I have, in order to make a home for Jane and myself.
Yeah.
You know, marriage seems to suit you too, Rawdon. I must confess that I've been guilty of underestimating Mrs. Rawdon Crawley in the past. She's a woman of great liveliness and perception.
I'll say.
Lady Jane is, of course, of impeccable moral character and a wonderful mother.
But lively she ain't, eh? Is that what you're saying?
Not at all. Now, I gather from what you've been saying that times are hard for you and Mrs. Rawdon Crawley.
And the boy, especially the boy.
Of course. Nothing would please me more than... to be able to offer you some financial assistance.
Oh, damn decent of you, Pitt.
However, although it may seem on paper that I am a wealthy man, that does not take account of the heavy outlay of money all these improvements have occasioned. I mean, there are tenants who deserve a sound roof and whole windows, but I can no more pay for them before the dividends arrive in January than I can fly.
So that's how it is it? Well then, Pitt, maybe I could lend you some money to tide you over.
Well, that's very kind of you, but really there's no need.
It's a joke, brother. Just a joke.
On Richmond Hill there lives a lass more bright than May Day morn, whose charms all other maids surpass.
No, no, please don't stop.
I thought I might have been disturbing the household.
Oh, not at all. I only wish I had such accomplishments.
Sadly, some of us have had to learn to sing for our supper since childhood.
Rebecca, there is something I wanted to ask you. This afternoon, some of the children from the estate are coming here. I give them sweetmeats and read them improving stories. I wondered if you would like to...
Alas, I fear it would make me homesick for dear, ailing little Rorty.
I'm a little puzzled. Your husband said that the boy was in bouncing good health.
Well, that's fathers for you, isn't it? They notice nothing about their children.
So you won't come and see the dear infants?
Nothing would please me more. But I have already accepted an invitation from your dear husband.
Oh, he never mentioned that to me.
He has promised to read me his pamphlet upon the malt question.
And unless the problem of the malt question is addressed, the malt question remains unanswered, and an unanswered malt question makes for an unstable and divided country.
Well?
It's magnificent. Quite magnificent. I will show it to Lord Steyne.
Lord Steyne?
I know he will be impressed. I'm sure that a great future lies ahead of you. You fancy you hide your qualities away, but you cannot conceal them from me. Every word of the pamphlet shows your breadth of mind.
It's funny, you know, I could never get Jane to read 3 pages of it.
I don't want to criticise your dear wife, who is so kind and good, but the fact is, for all her aristocratic heritage, she knows nothing of the great political world. With your abilities, you will surely become one of the finest speakers in Parliament.
Oh, Rebecca, I'm so glad that you have become part of our family. How fortunate Rawdon is.
All this travelling and damn me for what? Pitt's as tight as ever, and yet he's rolling in it.
Well, he may eventually send us a few pounds, but in the end, it's his support and approval that's valuable.
Well, still, a little money would have come in handy. You were buttering him up enough. The creditors are gathering like flies.
Tell them that as soon as the Pitt's affairs are settled, they will all be paid. They won't know any better, and that'll gain us a few more months' grace. Besides, Pitt has asked me to prepare their London house against their return.
There's not much money in that.
Enough, if you know how to make mutually advantageous deals with builders and tradesmen. You know, Rawdon, if I had 5,000 a year and all our debts cleared, then I'm sure I could be as good a woman as Lady Jane. After all, it can't be that difficult to be a country gentleman's wife. Who's to say I couldn't dawdle about in the nursery and count the apricots off the wall?
Me?
Why, Rawdon?
You'd be bored out of your mind.
And so they return to London. Rebecca turns her attention to furnishing the Crawley London home and discreetly feathers her own nest by private arrangements with grateful contractors. But of course, she still has time for her influential friend, Lord Steyne.
So I'm to encourage Sir Pitt, am I?
It won't cost you that much effort. Yes?
Oh, it's little Rawdon, Mum. He heard the music and he wants to come down and hear you sing.
Don't be absurd, Briggs. It's way past his bedtime.
Oh, but Mum...
No, I won't hear of it. If he persists in this nonsense, tell him I'll come up and box his ears.
Yes, Mum. I'm sorry to intrude.
Yeah, quite right too. You know, your son doesn't like me.
Whatever gives you that impression?
He doubles his little fists every time he sees me. I heard him call me the bald-headed man with the large teeth.
I hope you didn't take him seriously.
Oh, no, of course not. But then, in my view, children should be neither seen nor heard.
You'd upset my dear friend Lady Jane by saying that.
Is she your friend?
She was. But I've decided to become fascinated by the malt question.
I think if I'm supposed to encourage Pitt's pathetic ministerial ambitions, I deserve a full explanation.
Well, there comes a limit to how far I can bring myself to share in Lady Jane's reading of tedious moral fables to bored children.
Of course. But the malt question is no more entertaining.
No, but in the end, Lady Jane will do what Pitt tells her.
You know, if Sir Pitt takes the lead, I might be able to persuade my women folk to receive you at Gaunt House.
So they have refused to receive me?
Oh, there's a time and a place for everything. I don't want to push them too far too soon.
Dear sensitive husband. But in any case, look here.
Oh, what's this?
It's an invitation.
His Gracious Majesty the King requests.
Lady Jane is to present me at court, whether she wants to or not. Do you see? Thanks to Sir Pitt, I will emerge from that august event, stamped forever an honest woman.
Oh, Rebecca.
Time passes, and little Georgie, George Osborne's child, celebrates his fifth birthday. He is the image of his dead father. And his mother, Amelia, and his grandfather, old Sedley, the ruined stockbroker, passionately dote upon him.
We're back!
Mama, Mama!
Georgie! What have you got there?
A lollipop.
Father, I told you, no cakes or lollipops.
What's the harm?
Father, you promised solemnly. It's bad for his health.
But Georgie deserved a treat. We met a sergeant with Waterloo medals in the park, and Georgie spoke up so well and so proudly, didn't you, Georgie?
I told the sergeant my father was Captain George Osborne, Mama, who died heroically on the glorious 18th. The sergeant offered me a penny.
Well, of course, Georgie had to refuse it. I explained as politely as I could that we don't take charity. I have been a man of some influence in the city, I told him. And my son, Joss, is at this very moment chief magistrate of Ramgunj in the presidency of Bengal, with a salary of 4,000 rupees a month. So we lack for nothing.
You had to tell him all that, Father.
It's no more than the truth. And I'm not having some sergeant think he's our equal for the sake of a penny.
It was then that Grandpa bought me a lollipop.
So that the sergeant could see we had enough money of our own.
But it's still spoiling Georgie.
And I suppose you don't spoil him.
Georgie, run along now.
But Ma...
There's my darling boy. I'll come up and see you very soon. Off you go. Father.
I tell you, it's good for him to get out and feed the ducks and see the redcoats. He can't be locked up in here all the time.
Of course not, but...
You don't want him to grow into a milksop, do you? He'll be starting school soon.
Yes, and we'll have to find the money from somewhere. George's pension is so small and we can't look to Joss for everything.
God knows I'm trying to get back on my feet. I own the import wines were a little disappointing. But I have high hopes of the Anti-Cinder Coal Company. I have drafted the prospectus.
But who's going to invest? Your friends...
Don't remind me of their ingratitude. They'll regret it soon enough. Once John Sedley has made his fortune again.
Oh, Father, please don't do anything foolish to endanger the little we have.
Amelia, I know the city and its ways. All right. I have had a run of bad luck, but one day...
Father, I must go to Georgie.
Well, of course... There is another way out of our financial difficulties, if you would condescend to take it.
What is that?
There's at least one man who'd marry you tomorrow, if you encouraged him.
What are you talking about?
That medical assistant who came to Georgie.
Father, that is enough. There will never, ever be someone to take George's place.
More's the pity. So, you see, it is still down to me.
The next Sunday, George's other grandfather, wealthy Mr. Osborne, in the company of his daughter Maria, pays his respects to God and the wealthier members of his local congregation.
Oh, good day to you, sir. Good day, my lord.
Father.
What now?
I went to visit the Mrs. Dobbin yesterday.
Why should that interest me?
Well, William Dobbin was a close friend of... of George's.
Maria, you know that name is not to be mentioned.
Well, fair Mrs. Dobbin had another visitor. In point of fact, two visitors.
Oh.
Father, I've seen him.
Seen whom?
Little George, Father. They call him Georgie. He was there with his mother and...
Don't talk about that woman.
The Mrs. Dobbin don't have a high opinion of her either. Of course, they blame her for driving their brother, the Major, away to India. Now they have heard that he's engaged to a Miss Glorvina O'Dowd, whose sister's husband was Major O'Dowd, who, of course, was a major in George's regiment, and they think
Maria,
that...
Maria, when is all this impertinence going to stop?
I'm sorry, Father. It's just that... Oh, you should have seen him.
But for what reason?
Because he's the noblest little boy I've ever seen.
Maria, please, control yourself.
But sitting there in church, I couldn't stop thinking. He is as beautiful as an angel. And so like his father.
Mr. Osborne sits in silence. Then he suddenly begins to tremble in every limb. Amelia also learns of Major Dobbin's engagement to Miss Glorvina O'Dowd, the sister that Mrs. Major O'Dowd has been trying to marry off since time immemorial. Amelia insists to herself that she feels no regret, no disappointment. Major Dobbin is her loyalist friend, the guardian of her boy. No more than that.
My dear friend, I beg to offer my most sincere congratulations. Georgie sends his love to his dear godpapa and hopes you will not forget him. I tell him that you are about to form other ties, but although such ties will be the strongest and most sacred, yet I am sure the widow and the child who you have ever protected and loved will always have a corner in your heart.
With many misgivings and much reluctance, Amelia sends Georgie to the little school which her resources can barely afford. Georgie rushes off with the utmost happiness. He has been longing for the change.
But I don't understand. I thought you told me yesterday that Sniffin was your friend.
Oh, no. Sniffin is a sneak, Mama. I don't like him at all. But I do like Bull Major because Bull Major has straps in his trousers. Can I have straps in my trousers, Mama?
I don't know, Georgie. They cost money.
But all the other fellows are going to have them. And I can't not have straps in my trousers, can I?
Oh, I'll see what I can do.
Mama?
What is it?
While I was waiting for you today, there was a coach outside the school.
Oh?
The gentleman inside kept looking at me.
What gentleman?
An old gentleman with thick eyebrows and a broad hat. He looked at me very much.
Did he say anything?
No, he just looked a lot.
You can probably guess why I'm here. As you know, Mr. Osborne has seen Georgie. Now, not to put too fine a point on it, my father knows that you are living here in somewhat straitened circumstances.
We manage?
Yes. But there is no need for this poverty. My father wanted me to talk to you before he makes a formal proposal through his attorney.
What proposal?
Mr. Osborne offers to take the boy and make him heir to the fortune which his father, my brother, should have inherited. He will also make you an allowance which will assure you a decent competency. Indeed, if you married again, he still wouldn't withdraw the allowance.
And what does Mr. Osborne expect in return for his generosity?
It must be agreed that Georgie will live entirely with his grandfather in Russell Square. Of course he will be allowed to visit you here occasionally.
Occasionally?
Provided...
Mr. Osborne, this proposal is an insult. I marry again. I take money to part from my child. Georgie is my life, my all. You must know I would sooner die than part from him. Tell Mr. Osborne that I will not consider his proposal for one single second.
Oh, but I'm not...
And now, please, I should like you to go.
Amelia has never experienced such anger or spoken so forthrightly. But once her sister-in-law has departed, Her firm resolve gives way.
Amelia, what's the matter?
Nothing, Father.
I'm afraid I have some bad news. The grocer refuses to supply us any more. It's not my fault. But for some time now, Joseph's remittances from India just haven't been arriving.
But why? It's not like Jost.
I don't know why. Maybe the...
Father, what have you done?
I've not done anything.
I can see it in your face.
Women don't understand financial matters.
I understand when you're not telling me the whole truth.
What?
Georgie's future is at stake.
Oh, yes, Georgie must have this, Georgie must have that. You never think of anything else. Books for Georgie, clothes for Georgie. Your old father might starve to death, freeze to death, for all you care.
Father, I can't cope with this. Not just now.
But it's only temporary. A moneylender in the city.
A moneylender? What have you done?
I've traded in the annuity from Joss.
What?
For what will be a good investment. In the end.
In the end?
Shares rise, shares fall. I can't expect you to understand, but I know the city. I have an instinct. These shares which I have bought...
Which you have bought with the annuity Joss provided for us?
They will rise again. I know they will.
Amelia, I can't just sit here and do nothing. I have my pride.
Oh, Father, what are we going to do? Oh, I've promised Georgie that he will have new clothes for Christmas. Oh, and yet we may not be able to feed him, let alone clothe him.
Oh, you despise your old father now, don't you?
Oh, no. I am sure you did it for the best. Oh, but how are we going to live?
Amelia has precious few places to turn for help. How can she tell her brother Joss what their father had done? Or bother Major Dobbin on the eve of what she believes to be his wedding? She tries to think of the skills she has to make money, sewing, painting, but finds there are women working harder and better than she can for 2 pence a day.
Oh, my God. I know I must try not to be selfish. If I hand Georgie over, then he will be raised to a fortune and my father will be saved from ruin a second time. Lord, please, give me the strength.
She says her father has met with fresh misfortunes. She says her own resources are so small that they're not enough to give George the advantages which are his due. She knows that those to whom he is going will do all in their power to make him happy. Oh, and she stipulates that she should have a written agreement that she should see the child as often as she wishes.
So, Mrs. Pride has come down, has she? I knew she would. Maria.
Yes, Father?
Get the room over mine ready for him.
You mean...
George's old room. Where else?
Moreover, his mother made Samuel a little coat and brought it to him from year to year when she came up to offer the yearly sacrifice.
You understand the Bible story, don't you, Georgie? Samuel's mother, Hannah, though she loved him so much, had to give him up because she had promised the Lord that she would let him serve in the temple if she was allowed to have a child. But she always thought of him as she sat at home, far away, making the little coat. And Samuel, I'm sure, never forgot his mother. And how happy she must have been as the time came when she could see her boy and see how good and wise he had. Oh, my boy. My treasure.
So Georgie goes off to his grandfather's as happily as he had gone off to school.
Goodbye, Georgie! Goodbye.
And Amelia is left quite alone.
Rebecca, my dear, this way. Your carriage awaits.
Mrs. Rawdon Crawley is reaching the summit of a remarkable social career. She is to be presented at court. Her brother-in-law, Sir Pitt Crawley, attired in a glittering uniform, leads her forth from her Mayfair home. Rebecca is adorned with grand feathers and daintily holds up a train of magnificent brocade. She steps into the carriage as if she is a princess.
Oh, look! Rawdy's waving. God bless the lad.
Rawdon, come along.
Rawdon follows behind in his old guard's uniform, which is woefully shabby and much too tight.
Bye, Rawdy!
Rawdon!
Becky feels as if she could bless the people out of the carriage windows, so elated are her spirits. Even the mildly reproving glances of her gentle sister-in-law don't affect her.
My dear, that brocade is magnificent. And the lace, too.
Thank you, Lady Jane. The brocade is just an old remnant. And the lace, well, it was a great bargain, and I must have had it these 100 years.
But it must have cost a little fortune.
No, I assure you, it didn't.
And indeed, Rebecca tells the truth. For when she was putting Sir Pitt and Lady Jane's London house in order, she found the lace and brocade in old wardrobes and quietly carried them home.
Those diamonds, Becky, where the deuce did you get those? Never seen them before.
They're quite magnificent.
So where do you silly men think I got them? I hired them, of course.
Oh.
You don't suppose all the diamonds at court belong to the wearers? Unless you're Lady Jane, of course, whose jewels are far handsomer than mine.
No, indeed, they are not.
And indeed, they aren't. When they arrive at court, the great Marquis of Steyne, there in his capacity as Lord of the Powder Closet, also seems impressed by Mrs. Crawley's handsome diamonds.
The diamonds sparkle, my dear, but not as much as you do.
I expect more original flattery from you, my lord.
Maybe. Whoever gave you those jewels must think very highly of you.
They have led me to believe so.
Hush! Here is His Majesty!
And so at last, Rebecca Crawley, née Sharp, the daughter of a drunken drawing master, comes face to face with her imperial master, King George IV. What passes between them must remain sacred. We do not pry into the conversations of royal personages. But it must be said that after this interview, there is no more loyal heart in all London than Becky's.
Here's another newspaper with the particulars of your costume, Mum. It must be in all of them.
How very galling some people will find that, Briggs. Bless me, there's a carriage at the door.
Who is it, Mum?
Well, I do believe there are two women in the coach. And one of them is the Marchioness of Steyne, and the other is her sister-in-law.
Oh, Mum.
So they came, and they delivered.
Here are the visiting cards.
Oh, such a beautiful carriage, my lord, all gilt.
Yes, Miss Briggs, I know what the carriage looks like. Well, Rebecca, I suppose now you have my wife's visiting cards, you'll pester my poor old life until you get an invitation to Gaunt House.
I live in hope, my lord.
All women are alike. Everybody's striving for what is not worth having. Gad, I dined with the king yesterday, and we had neck of mutton and turnips.
His Majesty eats turnips.
Miss Briggs, please. All I'm asking, my lord,
is you will go to Gaunt House.
Oh, Rebecca.
It's not half as nice as here. You'll be bored there, I am. My wife is as gay as Lady Macbeth, and her sister as cheerful as Goneril or Regan.
Oh, my lord.
But you'll get your invitation, but watch out how those women will bully you.
Oh, my lord, surely not. A gracious lady like me.
Rebecca, a word. If you don't turn off that abominable sheepdog permanently, I will have her poisoned.
Briggs?
Yes, ma'am?
I think it's time to go and give Rawdy his walk.
Oh, very good, ma'am.
Well?
The fact is, I can't send her away.
Oh, you owe her wages, I suppose.
Oh, worse than that, I have ruined her. Last year, when we were reduced to our last guinea, she gave us everything. She will never leave me now until we are ruined utterly or until I can pay her off.
Damn it. How much is it? What?
I dare not tell my husband. He would kill me. I've kept it a secret from everybody but you.
Oh, well, we'll see what can be done. The housekeeper at Gauntly Hall is old and infirm. If she dies, maybe I can arrange for Briggs to be her successor.
Oh, my lord.
Just so long as you promise not to find another sheepdog to take her place. And that reminds me, your son, Rawdon. We both know the boy can't stand the sight of me.
Rawdy is a loving boy.
Now, don't play the maternal role with me, Rebecca. It's simply that he's at the age now when he ought to be sent to a good public school.
But how would we ever find the money?
Well, it just so happens that I am one of the governors of that eminent old collegiate institution, the Whitefriars.
But even so,
these things can always be arranged for the right person.
I shall miss the lad, Becky. I'm damned used to having him around.
Yes, yes.
I can't say Eton did much for me, but Rawdy's not a dunce and he deserves a decent education.
Lord Steyne is being most generous.
I suppose I should be grateful.
Now, I really must go and get ready.
Oh, by the way, I meant to say, I saw Rags, the livery man, yesterday.
What did he want?
He thanked me for settling his bill. Could have knocked me down. Have we come into some money?
Well, I've made a few economies.
You've not got it off Briggs again, have you?
Oh, don't be absurd. Now, come along. You must get ready, too. This is an historic night. We are invited to Gaunt House.
Oh, must we go?
Can you doubt it?
And so Becky is received at Gaunt House. She plays the piano beautifully, and the Marchioness of Steyne and the other ladies are routed. And the worst of their defeat is that however hard they try, they cannot find an obvious fault with Mrs. Rawdon Crawley. Then young Rawdon leaves for public school, and the house seems empty, for his father at least.
Damn it! Briggs, I miss him.
Oh.
And I know it's for the best, and Rawdy's probably having the time of his life. But, you know, this morning I was going to go for a walk in the park like we used to. I just couldn't face it.
We all miss him, sir.
Yes. You were always a good friend to him, Briggs. I'm grateful for your kindness to him, and to us as well.
Well, I've never doubted that I'll be repaid handsomely, sir.
My lord!
Why, Colonel Crawley. What a surprise. I just dropped by to see if your wife would care for a drive. Are you not out and about?
Don't feel up to it, to be honest with you.
Ah, Miss Briggs. That's a very handsome shawl.
Oh, it's a present from Mrs. Rawdon, isn't it magnificent?
Indeed. And you have no doubt been given a more substantial present as well.
No, I don't understand.
Are you saying you've received nothing else?
My lord, what are you talking of?
So that's the game, is it?
My lord, I really
don't... Miss Briggs, would you go and see if your mistress would care for a drive?
And Colonel Crawley feels a pang his slow-moving brain finds hard to explain.
Rebecca...
My lord?
You are an unsurpassable liar.
I protest.
No, no, Miss Briggs is delighted with her shawl. But you never gave her any of the money I provided. I expected a rather different return for my generosity.
What are you saying, my lord?
I am saying that the situation cannot continue as it is.
My dear Briggs, I will be grieved beyond measure to lose you, but our means are limited.
Oh.
Lord Steyne has indicated that he has this magnificent opportunity for you at Gauntly Hall.
Oh.
It is a splendid position, practically mistress of a magnificent mansion most of the year, and it is yours for the asking.
Mine? Oh, my dear Mum. Oh, thank you. Oh, thank you.
So Miss Briggs duly departs to take up her new duties. And Colonel Crawley broods with every new day. But he still feels compelled to accompany his wife as she now moves on into the highest reaches of English aristocratic society. Tonight, the entertainment is provided by the Marquis of Steyne at Gaunt House, with Sir Pitt Crawley and his wife among the guests. The highlight of the evening is to be the charades, in which the talented and handsome Mrs. Rawdon Crawley features prominently in the role of Clytemnestra.
Good evening, Pitt.
Rawdon, I wanted to have a word with you.
Yes?
To be honest, I'm not sure that appearing in charades, however august the company, is quite seemly for a married woman who is a member of the Crawley family.
You'd better talk to Becky about that.
Sadly, Rebecca does not seem to pay me the attention she once did, which is unfortunate, because tongues wag.
Oh?
Society is beginning to speak of her lightly. Lord Steyne, though a nobleman of the greatest station and talents, is a man whose attentions would compromise any woman.
Damn it, Pitt! Don't you think I don't know all the damn tittle-tattle? But as I sat there watching her, she seemed so magnificent, a fellow can't help but be proud. She's always been damned lively, that's Becky's way, and some people are bound to think the worst.
You are certainly right about that.
Well, my dear... Revelling in your triumph.
I believe I am, without doubt, the most accomplished and dazzling young lady in the room. But, oh, heavens, why are the rich so dull?
I did warn you.
I keep thinking how much more amusing it would be to wear spangles and trousers and dance before a booth at a fair.
You do it very well. Perhaps instead you might consider a private performance.
Rebecca, it's time to go.
Is it?
I think so, don't you, my lord?
You are her keeper and devoted husband, Colonel.
Just so.
So, after all that, are you not coming back with me?
No, I fancy a walk and a cigar.
Rawdon walks slowly down the street, lost in what is for him the nearest thing to thought. Does his dear wife still care for him? Or is he nothing more than an unvalued, often ignored consort, tolerated by his beautiful and intelligent wife purely for the sake of appearances? But while he ponders, the world of the Rawdon Crawleys is about to be changed forever.
Beg pardon, Colonel.
Oh,
I was to speak to you most particular. It's no use bolting, there's three of us.
How much is the debt for?
Only a small thing. £136.06. Send a suit to Mr. Nathan.
And if I can't pay?
Well, then you're under arrest.